Hello, I'm Joanna Gajdorowska. Welcome to the first of six World Cup countdown special programmes as we build up to Qatar 2022, the Middle East's first ever World Cup, which kicks off in November. Each show will focus on a different region, and this month we're zoning in on South America. Could this be the year Lionel Messi finally gets his hands on a World Cup? The Argentine has won just about every major honour apart from the biggest in world football, and this could be his last chance. We'll take a look at the world's number one ranked team, Brazil, as they look to end their 20-year wait for the trophy. And their star player Neymar closes in on Pelé's international goal-scoring record of 77. We'll also catch up with some of the fans hoping to make the journey from Brazil to cheer on their team in Qatar. We've got Juan Arango standing by for us in Miami. He is the Latin American correspondent for Diario Sport and Ahora Mismo. And Eli Mengem is in London. He is a football broadcaster with Copper 90. He spends his life immersed in football and specifically the fan culture that goes with it. So there's just 5 months to go until the biggest show in sport arrives here in Qatar. All 32 teams have now booked their places for the tournament, divided into eight groups of four, with only one capable of going home with the trophy. We'll go into the groups in more detail a bit later on, but first, our correspondent Andy Richardson brings us up to speed on what's been happening here in the host nation as we tick ever closer to kickoff.
An exclusive waterfront club in Qatar's capital city, Doha, is now closed to new members. Wales, Australia, and Costa Rica have become the final countries to qualify for this year's World Cup.
Excitement for the World Cup is building, not only in Qatar. We see that the excitement is all over us, especially with all the countries that qualified. Demand on tickets is extremely high. And, you know, I know that it's going to be disappointing for some fans that wouldn't be able to find their tickets. But we can see that people who have got their tickets are excited.
Official World Cup artwork is in place at Qatar's main airport, designed to give arriving fans an immediate sense of the experience to come.
I hope that it can resonate with all the visitors coming into the country, and the airport is an excellent location because it's like the doorway to the country. I wanted to show some part of our culture, our football culture, that anybody could relate to.
Organisers expect more than a million fans to come to the country during the World Cup, and Qatar can expect to take on a distinctly South American feel come November. Applications from fans in Argentina and Brazil led the way during the latest round of international ticket sales. Three of the four most in-demand group games all involved Lionel Messi's Argentina team.
Fans and players are set for a unique experience, the most compact World Cup in history, being played not in its usual slot of June and July, but in November and December to avoid Qatar's summer heat.
Instead of finishing the season and break and go on their holidays and then reset, have to come to a country and do a mini pre-season and, you know, sort of like get the rhythm going again. And I experienced it four times. For the Premier League players, European players or teams that are in their leagues, they'll just flow straight into the system. And I actually think the level of quality of football will be more dynamic, more intensity. Obviously, there's always that tactical element, but I think it works amazing for the players.
Is the fact that this is a very compact country with minimal travelling, is that going to help the players, do you think?
Not only the players, the fans too, because the player has always a comfortable life. They have a private jet, everything is organised. But you have to think the same about the fans. And this is sure the best for the fans when they have short distance and they can watch maybe two games for the day.
A World Cup like no other is being promised. The host nation now just has to ensure it's delivered. Andy Richardson, Al Jazeera, Doha.
Well, we're focusing in on South America in this show, and we thought we might be talking about Peru becoming the fifth side from the region to book their ticket to Qatar. But as Andy mentioned in that report, it was Australia that went through at their expense, beating them 5-4 in a penalty shootout in the playoffs here in Qatar. There were joyous scenes in the Aussie changing room, but as you can imagine, it was a different vibe back in the Peruvian capital of Lima, as Mariana Sanchez reports.
With the last penalty here, the crowd, a huge crowd, thousands of fans here in the center of Miraflores who were ecstatic with the game, went completely silent. There was disbelief and tears followed for many after three long, nerve-wracking hours of this game. There was so much expectation to win this entry to the next World Cup. The country was mainly paralyzed. The government declared a holiday, and for many, it was the most important day of their lives in many years.
I feel disappointed. I expected much more from Peru. Australia is not the greatest soccer team.
In this country, immersed in political upheaval, many say that this loss will be significant.
So let's get a closer look at the groups. Instead of Peru, it is the Australians who find themselves heading to their fifth straight World Cup, and they're in Group D alongside the defending champions France, as well as Denmark and Tunisia. Okay, well, let's bring in Ellie Mengen first. Ellie, were you as surprised as everyone else was that Australia qualified out of that game?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as an Australian myself, I went into the game thinking we've got a very slim chance of even getting close to a result. I'm still waking up every morning thinking, wait, are we actually in this? You have to remember, Peru were 20 places above Australia in the FIFA rankings. So for us to not only get a result, but a result in a game that meant so much to Peru, we're stunned, to be quite frank. This is hardly a vintage Socceroos squad. This is a very average Australian side compared to the last four sides that have competed for the previous four World Cups.
Juan Arango, you know, thousands of Peruvian fans made it across to Qatar for that match, and it is going to be such a shame not to see them here come November.
Well, it is. It's going to be a major shame that, you know, one of the more intense fan bases that you got to see in Russia ends up not being in Qatar. But that's, you know, a different point. I mean, I think what Ellie said is very true. Many didn't expect Australia to be there, but Australia were able to execute their game plan much better than Peru.
Stay there, guys, because we're going to shift our focus now to Brazil, who are currently the world's top-ranked team. They are the only nation to have won the World Cup five times and the only country to have appeared in every World Cup finals tournament. But they haven't won it for 20 years, not since Ronaldo scored twice to beat Germany in the 2002 final in Japan. Things look promising this time round, though. They boast one of the biggest stars in the world in Neymar, and they finished qualifying well clear at the top of the South American table, unbeaten in their 17 games. Monica Yanakiev caught up with some Brazil fans in Rio de Janeiro who are hoping to make the journey to Qatar to cheer on their team.
Football is more than a game in Brazil. It's a passion. And 41-year-old Luiz Carvalho dos Santos is an example of how far Brazilians will go to cheer for their team. He created the Green and Yellow Movement, an international network of more than 100,000 fans to root for the Brazilian team whenever and wherever it plays.
We already have our own headquarters in Doha, with some 10 people helping us organize things here.
Santos himself was recently in Qatar. He was invited, together with fan leaders from 33 other countries, to visit the Gulf nation and discuss logistics.
Fans always face difficulties. For example, during the Brazilian World Cup, we weren't allowed to take our instruments to the stadiums, which is absurd. Now we'll be able to. The meeting was very helpful to discuss mass accommodation, to let us know what size instruments we can take, and to understand the culture of the country, which is very different from our own.
The Green and Yellow Movement became known in the last World Cup in Russia with a hit song reminding people that Brazil is the only country that won five championships, 1958, 1962, 1970, 1994, and 2002. Now the group is already practicing to sing what they hope will be Brazil's sixth victory in Doha.
Brazil has many chances of winning a sixth cup. It's one of the world's best teams. The players are excited. They have the same coach as in the 2018 tournament, and the team was undefeated in the qualifying games.
Carlos Falconieri already bought his ticket from Rio to Qatar with stopovers in Italy and Egypt.
I've been following Brazilian team for many years, 1994 in the United States, 1998 in France, 2006 in Germany, 2014 offshore in Brazil, and 18 in Russia.
But not many Brazilians will be able to afford such an expensive trip, especially in a moment of economic crisis. That's why the movement is planning events in Brazil.
The Green-Yellow Movement has 174 embassies to represent their fans all over the world. They're present in 14 countries, including Qatar, and in all Brazilian states. Right now we're standing at their headquarters in Rio de Janeiro. Romulo Duarte, the movement's ambassador in Rio, says his job is to pick a place in the city they can decorate with banners and flags, and where fans can watch the games together. But Qatar, he says, will host a unique party.
During the World Cup in Russia and even in Brazil, the distance between stadiums was huge. In Qatar, they'll be an hour away from each other. Fans from all over the world will be concentrated in one place. I imagine there will be more fans than the local population. It will be an invasion of fans.
The Green and Yellow Movement wants to attract fans from other countries like Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh. They're making videos with their songs to be translated into many languages, all of them cheering for Brazil. Monica Yanakiev, Al Jazeera, Rio de Janeiro.
Just picking up on that report from Monica there, Ellie Mengham, what is it about the Brazilian team that's so attractive to international fans?
Well, I think it's a combination of a few things. The style of play that they've always had, their unique, iconic green and gold kits, they really stand out. And just the history of Brazil and its connection with the beautiful game. I mean, many people say England created the game, but Brazil perfected it in the style that they play with legends like Pelé, Romário, Garrincha and so many others. I think it's just this combination of this legendary, beautifully aesthetic, pleasing football that makes them so beloved. And of course, the supporters that come with that, they incorporate their culture, the samba, the drums, everything that goes with it. And what you get is this really attractive, eccentric way of living football on and off the pitch. And I think that's why everyone loves them. That's why they're often many people's second team. Whether or not they're going to succeed this time, I don't know. I heard earlier about how many people are quite optimistic about their chances of winning it because they've qualified top of their group, undefeated, I believe. However, I should remind people that the last time Brazil won the World Cup, 2002, they actually came fifth. They just qualified. They snuck into the 2002 World Cup, and then that's when they won it. So I often find that some teams do best when they sneak into the tournament, not when they just glide in.
There will be many of these matches taking place at Brazil nighttime, really. So how much of an impact, if any, will that have on how this World Cup is being followed over there?
Well, I think that I don't know, actually. I haven't thought of it like that. But Brazilians, they'll party at any hour of the day or night or morning. So I don't think it's really going to affect them there. I remember, once again, they won the World Cup in South Korea and Japan. It was the early morning there, I think 5 or 6 a.m. And I remember scenes of Copacabana Beach when they won it there. So I don't think it really matters to Brazilians. They will party whenever, wherever.
Well, let's just take a look at Brazil, who are in Group G alongside Serbia, who didn't progress out of the group stages at the last World Cup in 2018, and Cameroon and Switzerland, who failed to qualify for the tournament in Russia altogether. It's hard to see them not make it out of this group. Juan, let's bring you in now. Brazil are the top-ranked team in the world right now. They're many people's favourites. Neymar's closing in on Pelé's record of international goals, of 77 international goals. How does he compare as a player to the legendary Pelé?
You know what? There was a great... I spoke to a couple of former Brazilian players in the past, and it wasn't referring Neymar, but it's kind of giving you an idea of how they're able to play. They would say, you know, when Maradona would take off his boots, you'd see that his left boot was a bit more worn out than his right. With Pelé, it was both that were worn out just equally. He was very good ambidextrous from an ambidextrous standpoint. He was able to play on both ends. He was able to be that player that can pull the strings. And I think there's a lot of similarities to Neymar in that aspect, although Neymar plays over on the left and a little bit wider a lot of times. But it's also the impact that he has from a media aspect that ends up being what Neymar ends up being set apart from everyone else, and ending up in a very rare air type of situation where you start to see those comparisons to Pelé, where you start to see that he's the one that has the burden of over 220 million people on his shoulders, like he did back in 2014 and like he did back in 2018 as well. So every little thing is so microscopic and so overanalyzed when it comes to him. So I think that's where the similarities do end up coming through. But you have a player that is very intelligent when he's able to have the ball at his feet, that understands where he needs to be and how he needs to play. But more importantly, he understands what he means to not just the national team, but to Brazilian football right now.
So a lot of pressure there on Neymar's shoulders. Well, guys, you know, we'll just go from one South American powerhouse to another. Brazil's great rivals, Argentina. All eyes will be on Lionel Messi to see if he can finally get his hands on the World Cup. He and his teammates are in good form on an unbeaten run of 32 games, during which they have claimed the Copa America title, which was Messi's first international trophy. Well, Argentina is synonymous with the World Cup, thanks largely to Diego Maradona, who won it in 1986. He died in 2020, so this will be the first edition without him on the pitch, coaching or in the stands. Teresa Bo reports from Buenos Aires.
A plane to honour Argentina's football legend Diego Maradona. A flying museum that's meant to carry Maradona's history around the world and also to Qatar for the World Cup.
This transcends everything and goes beyond what you can imagine and say. How far can a fan go? Well, as far as a plane goes, it's beautiful.
The former World Cup winner died of a heart attack in November 2020. And this year's World Cup will be the first one without the man many in Argentina see as a national hero. But if for many, Maradona will be watching the World Cup from heaven, Lionel Messi will be the one everyone in Argentina will be looking at.
Before winning the Copa America last year, Lionel Messi was criticized for failing to win the World Cup and other tournaments. He was constantly being compared with Diego Maradona. But the situation is completely different now. Lionel Messi is heading to Qatar with the full support of his country and his fans.
At this football stadium in Buenos Aires, fans say time is not moving fast enough. People are anxious to see Messi and national team play.
What we're seeing now is that there's a team and we're going to make it far in the World Cup. Diego Maradona, I saw him live in this stadium, but Messi is in my heart.
Argentina is in the middle of an economic crisis. Exchange rate controls make it difficult for many in the country to travel. But the World Cup will provide some distraction in times of economic hardship. People here need something to celebrate, and that's why they're hoping that Messi and his teammates can deliver in Qatar.
Messi is a winner nowadays with the national team. And Messi is happy being the captain of this national team. And Messi is surrounded by other world-class footballers. In the last World Cup, Argentina was Messi-dependent. Now, it's not like that. Messi is the star of the team.
A star that at 34 years of age may only have one more chance to shine at the World Cup. Teresa Bo, Al Jazeera, Buenos Aires.
Argentina's group looks like this. It features two of the greatest players in world football right now in Lionel Messi and Poland's Robert Lewandowski. Mexico and Saudi Arabia complete Group C. All right, Juan, let's come to you because Lionel Messi, he's won pretty much every big trophy out there except the World Cup. So how close will he get this time around, do you think? And is this his last chance?
Is it his last chance? Maybe. I guess you have to say it from that perspective, because he's the one that kind of raised that speculation, not whether I believe it or not. But when you start looking at this Argentina side, he is in addition to, he's that cherry on top. He's that proverbial extra in terms of everything, because the team functions so well with or without him, and just as well with or without him. So that's the big question mark. How far can they go? Well, they've already been rather close. If you look back at 2014 and them getting to the final and, you know, just being moments away from going to a penalty shootout, and who knows what would have happened then, and Mario Götze preventing that from happening. But they could get to a final. And you know what's the greatest thing about this, Joanna, is the fact that many in Argentina are like, yeah, we believe that we can win, but if we don't, that's okay. We're happy with what Argentina's become, because this team, this group of players has been able to reconnect the national team with their fan base. And I think that's been more important and more of a compliment to what this team has been able to do than winning the World Cup. Obviously, they're going to want to go and compete to win it. But that connection, once again, has been restored, because there was a bit of a disconnect in the previous two World Cups, maybe even three, if you start looking at what Argentina were capable of kind of isolating themselves from the fan base. A lot of criticism with the media and by the media towards this team. That's been more important for, in the long run. But if in terms of them competing and contending, they're one of the favorites. And you cannot say they aren't based on how they're playing.
Ellie, I want to bring you in now, because Messi against Lewandowski in this group, Ballon d'Or winner against the best FIFA men's player. Who's going to come out on top, do you think, in the final group game when these two teams play each other?
I think with Messi, it's something. There's something more carrying him this time. He knows this is almost certainly his last chance at winning this. And I think Argentina, they've just got more experience at the World Cup. And I think Lewandowski, with his issues that he's got currently trying to leave Bayern Munich, it's been he's been public about his issues there. I think Messi's all in. He's focused on Argentina, and I think he knows this has to be his time.
Ellie, Argentina have some of the most passionate fans in world football. What do you think they'll make of Qatar hosting the World Cup?
I think they're going to have a great time. I mean, wherever the Argentinians go, they have a great time. But as was mentioned earlier in the show, this tournament is going to be hosted in a way that makes going to games so accessible wherever you are. This is going to be the only tournament where you could possibly go to every single game in a day, all three matches, because the stadiums are so close by. So I think they're going to have a great time. They're going to take over Doha. Don't worry about that. And I think they're just going to they're going to love it. It's going to be hot. They're from a very hot country. I think you're going to see the best of Argentina, not just in Argentina, but in Doha.
Well, the other two South American teams who have qualified for Qatar 2022 are Ecuador and Uruguay. Ecuador are playing in the official opening match against host Qatar before they face what could be a potentially tricky opposition in the Netherlands and then Senegal. Uruguay are in Group H with Portugal, Ghana and South Korea. Ellie, what do you think we should be expecting from Uruguay and Ecuador from this tournament?
Well, I think when it comes to these two teams, they're very different situations. Ecuador are returning back to the World Cup after missing out on 2018, whereas Uruguay make it a lot more regularly and have far higher expectations, as they've won the tournament twice and made the semi-finals four times. For Ecuador, I'd say they've got a bit of an easier group on paper against Netherlands, Qatar and Senegal. However, with a team like Qatar, people aren't expecting much, but you have to remember Qatar won the Asian Cup and they're the host. And when you're the host, you've always got that 12th man of the country behind you, being there in the stadium with you. I think Ecuador arguably have got a better chance to get out of the group, but there is going to be something else to it. Meanwhile, with Uruguay, well, they're in, I think, the most exciting group of all. They're there with Portugal and South Korea. Now, South Korea are fantastic. Portugal, Ronaldo, enough said. But then they've got Ghana as well. And you've got to remember, Ghana and Uruguay have history. The 2010 World Cup, they met in the quarterfinals, where the game went to extra time. And in the 120th minute, Ghana headed the ball over the line, Asamoah Gyan, and it was stopped by Luis Suarez's hands. It was an obvious penalty. Ghana missed that penalty. The game moved to a penalty shootout where Uruguay prevailed. It is one of the most legendary moments and games in the history of the tournament. And Ghana, I can guarantee you, there is not a Ghanaian who has forgotten about that match, where they were and the heartbreak they went through. They're going to be out for revenge. It's the last game. It's Uruguay's last game of the group stage. Actually, it's the last game of the entire group stage. And I think if you add up a game against Ronaldo and Portugal, a game against Hongmin Son and South Korea, and then obviously the emotional game of Ghana, I think it's Ecuador who are going to go out of the group and not Uruguay. That's my take.
And Juan, Ellie mentioned some of the tricky opponents that both Ecuador and Uruguay face. How do you see them faring? Do you think they will get out to the last 16?
98%. There was a poll made in Ecuador. 98% of the population in Ecuador prior to World Cup qualifying said, Ecuador going to the World Cup? Huh? You kidding me? No. And now many are eating their words. And they really believe in this young side. You have a very interesting group of teams that could end up surprising many. Uruguay can get knocked out of the group stage just as easily as they can get up into the semifinals. So that ends up being a very, very interesting and wide scope of opportunities.
Okay, so expect surprises at this World Cup is what you're saying. Juan Arango and Ellie Mengen, thank you. That's all from the show, but we'll be back next month switching continents to focus on the five African teams that will be heading to Qatar as we get ever closer to the main event itself, which starts November the 21st. And of course, here at Al Jazeera, we'll keep you right up to date every step of the way.